Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hey, this is Jessica with Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast, and I am here with my co-host. Please tell everyone who you are, co-host.
Hi, I'm Jen from Media.
And we are really, really excited to welcome the author of a absolutely lovely book. Please tell everyone who you are and tell us about The Witch and this, The Weaver and the Witch Queen. We always want to jump right into the witch part, but the Weaver is significant as well.
Yeah, it is kind of a mouthful. I'm Genevieve Gornacek. I'm the author of The Witch's Heart, which came out 2 years ago, and The Weaver and the Witch Queen, which is out July 25th. And I don't know how much you want me to say about the book.
So first of all, I know The Witch's Heart was, they both have roots, you know, similar roots with some Norse mythology. The Witch's Heart was had to do with Loki and that whole lore. This is different, and it's beautiful, and it's got like everything from like prophecy to just beautifully written characters, and I just loved all of them. So like if you were to like get stuck with Jen and I, I'm not going to say an elevator because that is so commonplace. let's say we were in the back of a very boring party and we're trying to entertain each other, and you're just like, hey, my name is Genevieve and I wrote this book about a weaver and a witch queen, and we're like, oh, what's it about? How would you engage us from this very boring party?
I would say that it is a fantastical reimagining of the origin story of Gunhild, Mother of Kings, who was a 10th century queen of Norway, so during the Viking Age, and she was married to the second king of Norway, Erik Bloodaxe, and it's just kind of her, how she got her start.
So before I fell into libraries, I was a medieval historian, right? And I wrote my dissertation on the Normans, which are who the Vikings became when yes. they left Norway.
Yes, yes.
And so obviously this appealed to me on like a million different levels. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about your journey from a historian to a creative writer of this material.
So it's always kind of gone hand in hand for me. So I started off studying this stuff in college. I got a Scandinavian studies minor. And I decided to do that while I was on scholarship studying abroad in Sweden. I was like, why not? Like, my grandpa was from Sweden, so I kind of like knew the language a little bit because I took classes. And then when I got back, I was kind of like, oh, I'll just do this minor. And the first class available was Old Norse language. So that was really like my gateway into this subject. And my writing has always kind of gone like hand in hand with my research. So I actually wrote The Witch's Heart, my first novel, for NaNoWriMo in 2011. and that was like while I was taking a course on Norse mythology. So it's always been like so linked for me, that the studying and the creativeness. But since I came at this like from academia, the hardest thing about writing these books is that I am such a stickler for like accuracy, and like having to divulge from things physically pains me sometimes. But in the end, I'm able to forgive myself if the changes I make are in service to the story.
I love that. And I love that, like, in a way, I think fiction sometimes lets you access a truth about the past that like doing a straight history doesn't let you, like a more yes. emotional truth about like what it would have been meant to be alive at that time.
Yes. You know? 100%. Yep.
And I have to say, shout out to NaNoWriMo, because we love NaNoWriMo here.
Yes.
We really, really do. We run tons and tons of events. We like it, like for every NaNoWriMo year and camp, we're always doing virtual writing events and author visits. So for all of those RIMOs out there who write, it happens.
You get published.
It happens.
Yes.
So First of all, I have to say, like, it's always exciting when an author like gets excited when Jen's like medievalist, and an author's like yes. I like to picture Jen's brain a lot in general. And you talked about accuracy. So talk a little bit about the characters in the book. So Gunnhild is one of them. And, you know, there's these two sisters and the king. Are they all historical figures? Did anybody get kind of made up? And how did you do your research on this? Because now my head is hurting just thinking about everything you had to do as a stickler to make this book work so well.
So it's funny that you should mention that. So Eric, Gunnhild, Arinbjorn, and Thorolf, as well as like the king and his wives and all of them, they are historical characters. Olaf, his son Tryggvi, they are all like people who are mentioned in the sagas. Signy, Odny, so the sisters, their family, even Gunnhild's mom, like, is not mentioned. So, like, I had to make up a whole cast. And the reason being is because we get a lot of the times, even when we do see women in the Icelandic sagas, which were my source material, the medieval Icelandic sagas, they were written a couple hundred years after the end of the Viking Age, which was roughly the 11th or 12th century, depending on who you ask. The extraordinary women that we do see a lot of the times are kind of well off or wealthy, and so I wanted to add Signy and Odny as just an example of like just regular ordinary women and like just kind of trying to live their lives and trying to survive, because in addition to you know, the more like upper class figures that we see in the sagas, we also in the legendary saga see shield maidens, and people have really latched onto this idea of like, oh, Viking women were warriors. And I say that because I do Viking reenactment or Viking Age living history. So I get that all the time. You know, I'm sitting there doing my crafts and people are like, aren't you supposed to be fighting? I thought all the women fought. I'm like, then who was doing all the work? Like, I don't know, people like to think it was some kind of like gender equal utopia back then, thanks to shows like Vikings, which I mean, I enjoy, but it kind of has given people this idea that, you know, since women could fight, therefore there was gender equality. And I'm like, it's complicated.
You've touched on there, like one of my favorite things to sort of think about if I'm either reading historical fiction or watching a historical movie, is that like, when you're not aware of the history as you are as an author, you kind of end up writing more about the present than you do about the past, you know? Yes. Like you are just sort of like put Viking clothing on your modern concerns, you know?
Yes.
So is that something that you actively struggle against, with like not to impose modern sensibilities on your characters? Do you try to keep them accurate to sort of you know, as much as we can glean about like the mindset of the age?
I did my very best, but there were a couple things that I did alter just for the sake of a modern audience. For example, unfortunately, slavery was a fact of life throughout thousands of years of human history. And I think when we say slavery in America, it has a different connotation than it did, you know, for the rest of a lot of the world. Like I didn't want to write about slavery. Like I really just did not want to do it. But at the same time, I think ignoring that part, like fact of the Viking Age, like the fact that enslaved people were one of like the top commodities that the Vikings stole and sold and traded, I thought that would have been irresponsible to just kind of gloss over that fact, because it would seem too much like romanticizing the past, which people already do that with the Viking Age already. Sorry. What I'm getting at is that nobody would have blinked at enslaved people. Like they were just kind of there. If you've seen Norsemen on Netflix, the enslaved people on that show are often the butt of jokes. And that did not sit right with me. So when I was writing this, I did have, you know, Odny and Gunnhild have like sympathy for these people that probably historically they would not have blinked at. And I tried to do that like because the past is so alien to us. I feel like I think we can't accurately recreate how people would have thought, but I think that readers today, if they saw you know, if they're, we're supposed to connect with a character who like is okay with slavery, that wasn't gonna fly. So I needed to have at least a couple of the characters be like, hey, I'm not comfortable with this, because maybe there were people back then who weren't comfortable with it. But I tried to do that without seeming too modern, if that makes any sense. I'm sorry, I just talked for a really long time.
That makes perfect sense to me. And I think that, you know, it hits on another thing that, like, when you're writing about history, you sort of have to do that balancing act between your depiction of the period and connecting, creating conditions where your readers can feel empathy for the character.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly.
So how much, what I want to know is, and I have to ask, the witchcraft aspect of it, you know, because there's some fantastical stuff in it, obviously. But did you do, you know, did you do some research into, you know, what was considered witchcraft back then? I know there's lots of lore about shifters and that type of thing. However, you know, there's lore, and where did you gather it from, and where did you decide you were going to keep it fantastical and keep it a little bit more historically accurate?
So I did a lot of research on Sather, which is a type of magic that is mentioned a couple times in The Witch's Heart, but I didn't mention it by name in The Weaver and the Witch Queen, because I wanted to keep it a little bit more vague. There's this book that I basically had at my elbow the whole time I was writing it called The Viking Way by Neil Price. And it's basically a breakdown of like everything we know about magic in this time period. And I was really intrigued because he mentioned something about this magic being connected with spinning. And so that was like, that informed a lot of how I built the magic system. So it was inspired by like things that we think we know. Because the tough part about the Viking Age and all the lore and all of that stuff is that the Vikings, people in the Viking Age did not write their own histories. They were written about them, and then hundreds of years later by their descendants. So it's really hard to say exactly what witchcraft was and what would have been considered a witchcraft, but we do know that some witchcraft was good and some witchcraft was bad. That was the impression that we get from the source material.
So when you're writing about people who are not represented in the sources, like enslaved people, or about, you know, non-elite women, it can be kind of like a sort of restorative act of history, right? Because like you're actually creating like a fuller portrait of the period by the people who just like, you know, the people who weren't the concern of the elites who could write, you know? And one thing I think that is handled super interestingly, and I don't want to spoil too much, but it was significant to me that this is like in many ways a, you know, not literate society, but one where like blood oaths are very important. And I think those things are connected, you know? So like, can you talk about like, in a, you know, we live in a world where the word is what is binding, you know? And like, so how does that function in a world without the written word, you know?
Right. Honestly, you would be surprised how quick, like how much people knew about each other, even though they were, you know, spread out and didn't see each other that often. Gossip traveled, and if your family's honor and your honor were everything to men. And with, like in the stories, a lot of the times the women are like you egging the men on to go like defend their honor. And so they're complicit in this whole like honor culture. But especially in the Icelandic sagas, because Iceland is so small, like compared to the rest of the, you know, world at this time. So like people knew everything about each other. They knew, you know, oh, he's descended from this person, this person, this person. It was a very oral culture. So like, the poetry that got written down later, we think that it was circulating, you know, for hundreds of years, just by mouth, like, you know, person to person. Poetry was currency as well for that exact reason, because, you know, some of these praise poems we get for the kings, like they lasted that long because, you know, they were kind of significant. And so If you told somebody you swore an oath, like people will know that you swore an oath. It doesn't have to be like, you know, written on a runestone or something for people to remember it. They'll remember. I think that especially like since we've become like a literate culture, I think our capacity for memory has like suffered. I've heard that before in my folklore class in college, how societies that are non-literate can still like memorize things like to the degree that like we just would be flabbergasted.
I actually have a question about names. So as you mentioned, the, you know, the main characters are historical figures. One thing that I always found interesting when reading these stories is, you know, obviously you have the things like someone's last name is Haraldsson, like they're the son of Harald, but then you have the, you know, like so-and-so's daughter.
Yes.
And I always thought that that was really cool too.
Yeah.
How significant was that in the oral tradition as to knowing who so-and-so was? There's one character at one point, and I'm trying to remember what his father's name was, but it's like so-and-so the bald. And they're like, well, there's a lot of people with his first name and he's not bald, which I thought was hilarious. Do you want to speak about that a little bit?
Yeah. So there are a finite amount of names in this culture. And basically I took the Sagas of the Icelanders and looked at the index when I was like naming new characters and being like, oh, this could have been a name. And then I just give him a different last name. Right. So yes. So that was important to know, like whose kid you were. And again, like their obsession with kind of genealogy and putting themselves like, this is my place in the world because of my ancestral line. And it's really funny that you would mention the bald Grim, Scott the Grim, because he is like the father of Thorolf in the book, and as well as Thorolf's brother Ael, who has his own saga. So there's a lot of guys named Grim in the sagas, so that's why they had these like amazing nicknames. Like if you ever look up saga nicknames, they're like totally off the wall. Like they're amazing. Some of them we don't know what they mean. But they're just
are they like the opposite of Puritan names, which like you look them up and you're just like, somebody named their kid thou shalt not, you know?
Yes.
like they're like these really just wild names.
Yes.
That you're just like, what?
Yes. Oh, this is Olaf, this is Bjorn, this is Grimm. Like which ones? Like there's so many guys by that name. There was even supposed to be a guy in Eric's herd called Bjorn, but I was like, I don't want that people to get mixed up with like the other Bjorn, so we're just gonna cut him. Like wouldn't be a saga if there weren't two guys named Bjorn, honestly.
What I really love about this is that, like, you know, we're talking about a world where like all these issues like identity and history and myth and like collective memory, like they're all sort of like acts of community. Like, and I think we need to like see those things as like individual acts. Like say a historian sits alone in a room with a bunch of books, you know, and produces history by themselves. But like it took a whole community to remember a history or to remember a lineage or something like that. Like it's just and I think that you do such a good job of like bringing that world to life in a way that really makes sense to a modern reader. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. Community would have been everything to these people. And you know, you hear about like the heroic saga figures who are like going alone, and it's like those guys are usually the outliers. You were dependent on your community for everything. So I think it's a modern thing to act like, oh, you gotta go it alone. Well, do you really?
It was just a super well told story. Are you going to return to this? Are you going to write another one anytime soon?
I really hope so, but it's kind of up in the air right now what my next project is going to be. So keep your fingers crossed, because I cut a lot from The Weaver and the Witch Queen, and there's a lot more that I would like to do with these characters. I mean, we have the whole rest of Gunhild's life, which she does some pretty things she does are kind of bananas. So we'll see how that goes.
I just want to know, did you have a favorite character to write? Because you do shift perspectives.
Right. I enjoyed both of them, honestly. I enjoyed Audney's kind of like pragmatism and her determination. And I enjoyed Gunhild just being like, fake it till you make it. I got this. Nobody help me. Wait, help me. You know, like the whole time. So they were fun because they're so different. And I just really love them both. I just wish I would have gotten to write Signe a little bit, because she was a lot of fun as well, in my head at least.
I used to have a professor when I was doing my undergrad degree who, you know, while teaching history, we would do like dates and names and all that kind of stuff. But then she would really frequently ask you to like stop and imagine. She's like, imagine being in this church and smelling the incense and seeing the light come through the window. And I think that that was such a evocative way of doing history. And I think that like really vivid historical fiction like that is like an extension of that. Like it's a, it really brings history to life in a very vital way.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's, oh, that's great. Because that's been me so many times with, you know, my sources, like, what would it be like to be like standing in this hall? And I've like, I've gotten to visit like reconstructed Viking halls, which like, oh, has been amazing. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And that's a really cool exercise.
Oh, nice.
Well, thanks again. Please check out The Weaver and the Witch Queen. and Genevieve, thank you so much. This was Jessica once again. My co-host was...
Jen, goodbye.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.